I'm Jason Gay, and it's time for three stories you should know. As we all anticipated, the most exciting and controversial moment from the past week in sports came during the fourth inning of a Wednesday afternoon game between the Chicago White Sox and the Kansas City Royals.
Tim crushes this ball. He throws the bat. The ball goes flying. It is gone. 2-0 Sox.
That was Tim Anderson mashing a home run, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Julie DeCaro, sports writer and host at Chicago's 670 The Score via Skype, and by Amira Rose Davis, Penn State professor and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast. Welcome back to both of you.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Jason. Thanks.
I'm starting with the bat flips. Bat flips, maybe you love them, maybe you hate them. Either way, the bats are flipping. And good old-fashioned, tradition-obsessed Pepperidge Farm, Grandma's Hard Candy Jar Major League Baseball still can't seem to figure out what to do with them. For those of you out there who haven't had the pleasure or outrage of witnessing one, a bat flip is when a batter hits a home run, preferably a no-doubt-about-it home run, and then chucks his bat skyward like a Roman candle in celebration. Some in baseball think this has gone too far. This week, Chicago's Tim Anderson ticked off the Kansas City Royals with his bat flip celebration, so the Royals retaliated by hitting him with a pitch in a later at-bat. Really? We're still doing this? It seems a little aggressive and short-sighted. At a time when baseball is desperate to inject a little fun into its sport, I'm not sure retaliation for bat flips is the way to go. Can't baseball players appreciate how a joyously flipped bat lifts all boats? I mean, bats?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, younger generations love the bat flips. They love players who show a ton of emotion. And I think we're also being remiss, you know, if we don't point out the fact that a lot of the people criticizing bat flips, it's coming from sort of the older establishment white baseball players. And a lot of times it's directed at players of color. And baseball's got to get this figured out, because the fact is that the NBA and the NFL have sort of embraced the drama. And baseball still has got the fun police out there talking about the fact that, oh, you showed me up, so now I've got to drill you. The response is completely disproportionate. Like, you hurt my feelings or you hurt my pride, so now I'm going to throw an incredibly dangerous object at your head at 95 miles an hour. It's completely ridiculous, and it's long past time for baseball to get over these stupid unwritten rules.
Yeah, precisely. I agree 100%. I think that what happens with these unwritten rules is you have this idea that the baseball guardians or whatever they want to call themselves are protecting a tradition, the tradition of baseball. But the tradition of baseball goes beyond the major leagues. Tradition of baseball includes the Negro Leagues, which were all about performance, including a team called the Indianapolis Clowns, who are literally like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. And so the idea that baseball is played one type of way and has these unwritten rules is really just another way to further marginalize and alienate large groups of people, particularly Latinx and Black players, from a game that they also have a large and long history to. I'm just so confounded by it. Like, if you don't want somebody to flip their bat, like, throw a better ball.
Also, Major League Baseball's still kind of in year zero of bat flipping. You look at the professional baseball overseas in a country like South Korea, the bat flip is like high art over there. They've been doing it for decades. All right, Amira Rose, you're up next.
Yeah, this week, Breonna Stewart, playing over in Russia in the EuroLeague Final Four Championship, came down in the second corner on the foot of Brittany Griner, and unfortunately, it resulted in her rupturing her right Achilles tendon. She successfully underwent surgery, but she will miss the entire WNBA season. This injury, though, points to a larger issue of the state of the WNBA, and it's a familiar discussion, but the very fact that she's over there to subsidize her WNBA salary, the fact that she plays year-long just to earn financial stability is really, really atrocious. Let's just remember that she is the reigning league MVP, all-star, first-team all-star, and her base salary last year was $56,000, and it comes at an interesting time, because the WNBA players are renegotiating their collective bargaining agreement. Yeah. And so while her surgery will be covered, her medical costs will be covered, it really does underscore this issue where you have your best players. That game that she was playing in featured seven top WNBA players. You have your best players going overseas every single year.
Julie, your thoughts. Do you think this will become a point of contention as negotiations progress?
I hope it becomes a point of contention. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it's something we see across women's sports. I've talked to U.S. hockey team players who have talked about the fact that, you know, they work three jobs so that they can play for USA Hockey, and then they're expected to go out and compete with people from other parts of the world who are able to just train full time. And it's an issue in the way that we value women's sports in this country, and that it's undervalued significantly compared to men's sports. So it's really time for the NBA to put their money where their mouth is, infuse a lot more cash into the WNBA. And while it's unfortunate that Breanna Stewart's not going to be playing, I'm glad that this issue at least has come to the forefront and people are finally discussing it.
Yeah, Amira Rose, I can't help but think that were this a men's basketball player, say Steph Curry was playing in Russia during his NBA offseason, there would be a national outrage as to why this actually was happening. Whereas, as you point out, this has been par for the course for many, many years. Why doesn't the NBA, which I think of as being a progressive, very optics-obsessed league, commit itself more to doing the right thing with the Women's League?
Yeah, I think the NBA has certainly shown signs of investing in various ways, but they're very particular about how they invest. You'll hear even the commissioner say, oh, it's on the league to sell itself and they need to get eyeballs. And they do kind of the bare minimum. And like you said, like to engage in this optic of supporting the league. But the fact remains that there is a lot more that could be done.
All right, Julie, you're batting in the cleanup spot. Bat flip away.
Yeah, I'm going to backflip. So if you're like me and you grew up playing soccer in this country, you've been hearing for like 20 years that soccer is the fastest growing sport in America, and pretty soon it's going to be huge. And we're just waiting for it still to become huge in this country, right? Well, good news from MLS this week, which is that they're expanding from 24 teams to 30. They're also now going to seek training and compensation fees for players that wind up playing for foreign clubs. So that means that players like Christian Pulisic and DeAndre Yedlin, who were raised and invested in by American soccer clubs and then wind up going to play for big time clubs overseas, there's going to be some cash compensation, hopefully. I'm hoping that we're able to end or at least significantly cut back pay for play soccer, which is what soccer has largely become in this country. And it cuts out a huge portion of youth soccer players in America. I've seen really good kids in my own kids' soccer club that have wound up sort of getting financed out of the game because their parents couldn't afford the fees anymore. So hopefully, if we've got more money going into these clubs, that leaves more money for scholarships and more money for that clubs can charge lesser fees or even have kids come in free altogether who really deserve to be there and sort of get pay to play out of American soccer.
It starts very, very young, like younger even than I think that we realize. By halfway through elementary school, you can be tracked into good soccer development programs, or you're on Maple League teams or traveling teams that require a parent to drive you, a car to get you to, you know, a field 45 minutes away. And so I think investment in soccer in the United States in general has a lot of opportunities to not only help inclusion of the sport at a young level and see that sustain, but also it trickles back into the women's game as well. And so I think there's actually a great opportunity with this expansion to just push the boundaries of what we think soccer coverage looks like. With this expansion, it does point to the fact that there is an audience, there is development to be done and places to tap into, and I would like to see that continue.
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear this discussed in a much more holistic ecosystem fashion than just the typical way we talk about expansion, which is, do these cities, will they put butts in seats? You know, clearly there's a bigger objective here. And do you think MLS is up to this, Julie?
I hope so. I mean, the first time I saw an Atlanta FC game, I was like, is this their first home opener? Because of just the pageantry and the excitement. And people are like, no, it's like this pretty much every game. I mean, if you watch, if you've ever seen, you know, Seattle games, Portland games, LA Galaxy games, I mean, obviously there is a huge market in this country for soccer. We just got to change the way it's marketed, and hopefully they'll get this figured out soon.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Amira Rose Davis, Penn State professor and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast, and Julie DeCaro, sports writer and host at Chicago's 670 The Score. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jason.
We'll be right back with Charlie Pierce. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only A Game NPR.